Good morning and welcome to the Garden Conversation. Today I am in a new garden and I am so wowed. I'm here at Skip Elliott's garden here in Dyea, and man, I have tasted some tomatoes that I didn't know could be grown here in Upper Lynn Canal. It's been fun. So I guess let's start out with talking about tomatoes, because like I said, that's what I'm most wowed about. But there's some other things, too, that I want to make sure we get to in the next 15 minutes. So what I found really fascinating is your experiments and what you've learned between the different hoop houses. And you are one of the rare people that has successfully grown tomatoes outside. So tell me what you've learned about that and what does better and all of that.
Well, it's been a real challenge. I've been working at it for 40 years trying to get tomatoes, and I've seriously done it the last 4 years. I found a variety gold nugget that would grow quite successfully outside with very little attention. And based on that, I proceeded to buy a tunnel, a cloth tunnel house, and use that to help see if I couldn't find other varieties that could grow outside. And since then, I've also built a couple of polycarbonate greenhouses and keep doing testing every year, the last 3 years, of what'll grow outside directly or in the tunnel or in the greenhouses. And as a consequence of that, I've got 9 varieties growing outside unassisted.
And one you said that you're going to take out of the greenhouses and you're just going to grow outside, right?
Right.
Which is which one? I can't remember which variety.
That's the sweet gold.
The sweet gold.
The sweet gold and the sun gold, the indeterminate, both taste really good growing outside. Mm-hmm. They're not as productive as some of the others. And if you grow those in a greenhouse, they'll do better in the greenhouse. Mm-hmm. But they still are the only two I found that taste really good that
outside.
Grow outside.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple others you said that you've grown outside, but they do much better inside. And what are those?
Well, that's true of almost all of them.
That's true. That's very true.
There's some, like Glacier, is an easy one to grow. Everybody should give that a shot. And it grows with very little encouragement. It is a nice balanced taste to it.
It's a cold, very cold
very
hardy.
Very cold hardy.
And Stilettes is another one, right?
Silets.
Silets, yeah.
Yes, that's a cousin of Oregon Spring. Mm-hmm. And both of those grow outside or inside. Mm-hmm. But outside versions are just bland and
inside
and hard.
Yeah.
Whereas you grow them inside, my gosh, they're wonderful. They only get about 3 feet tall. They're like little condensed bushes. There's very little trellising or anything you have to do with them. And you'll get maybe 10 really big full-size tomatoes on each one.
Right. That's the nice thing about cherry tomatoes are the ones that tend to grow easier.
Yes.
They're shorter season. They just tend to grow easier. But I'm impressed with the size of your Silettes. And the Glacier also had some size.
Yeah. Now, the Oregon Spring or Silettes, if you're going to grow those, they're croppers. In other words, they all mature within about 2 weeks. That's good if you got a recipe or you want to store them away. It's bad if you just want to be eating them. So you need to have succession plantings of those.
But what I say in our climate is because we have a short climate, we don't have a whole lot longer than, you know, basically most in Haines, at least the beginning of October is the ultimate.
We're
never going to grow past that, basically in September. So,
same here.
Determinants, in my opinion, people have varying opinions on that. Some people will not grow determinants, but for me, it works really well because I don't mind having them done at the end of the season and do their flush, and that's it. Before we leave tomatoes, the ultimate tomato. I think I had the best tomato I've ever eaten today. And it was an Artemis?
Artemis.
And it's a cherry tomato.
It's a cherry tomato, a red cherry tomato. There seems to be, is it determinate? Is it indeterminate? It's controllable.
I mean,
you can grow it. You can grow it in a cage without too much pruning. And it has a fairly long life to it, you know, an extended period of producing. But like the one I gave you, the people at home, you may want to try this, is I cut back on the watering once they've been fruiting for a while. And like a stressed out grape, they produce a better flavor.
They put more flavor. They get sweeter. They
get sweeter.
Yeah.
And as you saw, I mean, I really think you could put these on a cheesecake or a creme brulee instead of strawberries. If you kept your eyes closed, you would not think it was a tomato.
It's amazing. Yeah, totally amazing. So now, one of the things, some of you in the audience are probably hearing the wind in the background. We're in Skagway, which is kind of known for wind. And so hopefully that won't be too obnoxious for you to listen to. I want to talk about a couple other things. We could talk about tomatoes all day, but we want to talk about one of the things that I'm very impressed with as well, is you have huge trellises of pole beans that are very productive. You've got a lot of beans on there. But what did you've experimented and come around to doing trellises. What have you learned, and how are you doing this pretty impressive setup?
Well, similar to one of the other guests that you had sometime in the last couple of years, I discovered that if you use the mesh that they use for concrete for driveways and sidewalks and whatnot, it works very good. I get those and I attach them to treated 2x2s, and I stand them up. They're about 7.5 feet.
And they're kind of at an angle, so they're leaning against each other a little bit. Teepee style.
Yeah. What would?
Yeah, I don't.
There's two of them.
There's two of them.
I hog ring them at the top.
Oh, okay.
And then I attach the screens to the 2x2s with zip ties. You could do the tops with zip ties too. It would be fine. And what I've done with, I've only been growing pole beans for about 3 years because I always thought they were such a pain, and that's why I came up with this trellising system. Mm-hmm. Which I can use for my peas. I use it for my
peas as well. Yep.
And
you could probably grow squash on them too.
I got them for the squash. Uh-huh. I just don't even use the 2x2s for them. Because I lay them sideways.
You use the mesh wire.
So they're 4 feet high.
So now, just to clarify, so what you do is you make this kind of, it's not really a teepee because it's only two, but you make them, you tie them at the top. And so then when you're done in the winter, you just take those with the wire still attached and you fold them together and you go and you can lean them. They don't even have to stay inside.
No,
right? you just lean them against a tree.
Yeah, I just, in minutes, I can lift one up. Or I'll take two of them at a time, and I'll just go stack them under a tree. And then same for setting them back up.
And how wide is the bottom then? When you set them back up, how wide is the bottom?
It's 4 feet.
About 4 feet between.
Yeah, the mesh is like 4 feet by 7.5 feet.
Uh-huh. But I mean, distance between the two poles. So how do you plant in there? Do you plant on the outside? Do you plant on the inside or both?
I have beds that are 3 feet wide and beds that are 4 feet wide, and I do use these on my 3 foot wide beds, and I just jam the 2x2s on towards the outside of the bed, and then I'll have two rows of beans or peas that are planted in the bed.
On the inside. Okay.
And as they grow up, they'll find that mesh, and then they just grab it and go on the outside.
Go on up. Okay. All right.
Once in a while, you have to correct one.
And then this year, you said that you've got a piece of that same mesh wire going across the top, and that's between two of those, and it's kind of stabilizing them. And
correct. So you have two parallel rows of beds, and then I'll throw just a loose piece of this mesh on top. Because last year I didn't do that, and the pole beans just kept going, and they were everywhere.
And they fall over because there's so many of them.
Then the mildew comes, and you've got problems. Yeah. But this way they can sprawl out there, and I can stand underneath and pick them from the bottom.
It's an amazingly good, clean system, and that's so important this time of year in the fall for beans, because they will mold and you lose your whole crop.
And the nice thing about this system is I like to rotate my crops.
You can easily move them.
It's no problem.
Yeah.
It's no problem whatsoever.
It's a good system and not expensive.
They're not cheap.
But you can use it year after year. You should be able to use that for 20 years,
yep.
Without... replacing it. So, okay, another crop I want to get on to is unique. I've never seen, there are people who grow fava beans, but I've never seen fava beans so mature as what you let them grow to maturity and you eat the bean green.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. When do you plant them? Do you plant them the same time as your other crops in the spring, or how do you do it?
They're very cold hardy.
Mm-hmm.
I plant them early May. I direct seed them in the ground.
Direct seed them. Okay.
And once they get established, it doesn't matter how much chickweed and what you get, because they just grow. They grow up and through it. But
They are a nitrogen fixer.
And they're a nitrogen fixer. They're great.
They're in the legume family.
I've experimented extensively with how close to plant them, how many rows in a bed.
And what have you come to conclusion?
My conclusion is I'll do 3 rows in a 4-foot bed, and the beans are spaced 6 inches apart.
About 6 inches, okay. And they grow, what are those, about 4 feet tall?
No, they grow 7 feet tall.
7 feet tall.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I guess they are taller than me. So.
And when they mature, you'll get, you saw the pods. They're big old pots, and they're like insulated inside. There's fuzz inside the pod, so they can actually withstand frost for the first couple of frosts.
So they're very cold hardy.
Yes, they are. And I grow a short-term variety called Vroma.
Vroma, yeah.
And they are exceptional. If you grow the Windsor or some of those other ones, you're going to be pushing up against hard frost before you'll see any beans.
Okay.
But with these, I've already had one harvest, and I expect to have 2 more harvests before the end of the season.
Wow. Well, for anybody that's wanting to grow fava beans, Vroma is the, it's a crop that not too many people grow here. And so I'm impressed. They were very tasty raw. I can imagine them being cooked. You said that you just blanch them and put them in the freezer.
I microwave them for 30 seconds.
A quick, easy bean crop.
But you can saute them in butter and put a little salt and pepper if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, they're a good crop for somebody looking for a new crop, wants to try something new. I think it would be a good one for our Upper Lynn Canal. So in our last few minutes that we've got to talk, squash. Let's talk about squash. You've got an impressive variety or different varieties. So what's your favorite?
Well, the ones that work the best here, I'm big on winter squash. Summer squash are pretty bland in general, and a lot of them won't even grow here. Patty pans and crooknecks, I could never get them to grow.
Crooknecks, I have a problem. Some people are growing patty pans successfully, not me, but some people.
Yeah, I do the Lebanese squash, is kind of a zucchini. Mm-hmm. But the winter squash is the challenge, and for me, it's always the challenge.
Right.
And what are you going to grow? And so, 3 years ago, I. What's this curry squash? K-U-R-I. Mm-hmm. It's a Japanese pumpkin squash and bright orange. And my gosh, they grew outside. I started them in little tents for the first few weeks until they hit the tent and took those off. And they just, so two years ago, they just grew exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. Huge vines, and you'd get like 3 or 4 big old squash on each one, and they are so tasty, and you can eat them skin and all, and you don't have to cure them, just so many wonderful things to say about it. Last year, I had some issues with them. I let them vine too much, and then they didn't really want to produce
vining more than they were fruiting.
And I just got too busy doing the tomatoes or something. Mm-hmm. And so this year, I got in there and I mercilessly pruned him, and I think I overdid it. So
there is a balance of getting some of those laterals off, but you got to leave some of them on so that you can get that's where the squash are produced.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, meanwhile, I've experimented with varieties, and I've got at least 5, maybe 6 kinds of curry varieties.
Mm-hmm. You've got one there that I want to mention because it's not as sprawling. And a lot of people can't grow winter squash because they go everywhere.
Right.
They sprawl. You've got a variety there that is, it looks more like a summer squash almost in the vine.
Yeah, Orange Cutie.
Orange Cutie.
And it's
A curry?
It's a curry squash.
It's a curry squash.
I think they call it a kiboka.
Yeah.
Curries are funny because sometimes they call them Hubbards. So it depends on the seed catalog you've got. But
yeah.
The Orange Cutie is a really good one. I'm getting 3-4 squashes off of each one, and it just grows in a little bush. You don't even have to support it at all. So I would encourage people to try that one.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I feel like I've gone into a garden down south because you are growing stuff that in the Upper Lynn Canal is not normally grown, Skip. So it's been very fun. Thanks for coming on the show with me and talking about this. And I'll be back because I want to see what you're experimenting with next.
Thank you. You come on back, and I'm honored to be a guest.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, well, thanks so much. All right. Happy gardening, everyone.